5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Vote and let your senators know how strongly you feel. Vote now.
Are you going to pack the
court? Make sure you, in fact, let people know you're a senator. I'm not going to answer the question.
Why would you answer that question?
The question is, the Supreme Court justice, radical left. Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This is so right.
Gentlemen, I think we've ended this.
This is so unprecedented.
He's going to pack the court. We're not going to give a list.
We have ended this segment.
Wow. Make America great again was President Donald Trump's motto as he stormed towards the White House 4 years ago. Well, judging from what the world witnessed yesterday during that first US presidential election, two things became crystal clear to me. One, America is absolutely cooked. And the second is that childcare workers are severely underpaid and underappreciated. Yesterday's debate was a debacle for the ages. The moderator, a seasoned broadcaster with Fox News called Chris Wallace, spent the majority of the time telling both President Donald Trump and Vice President Joe Biden to shut up and stop interrupting each other. Yet still, Trump's base nod and clap as he just says whatever he likes. Interesting though, throughout his entire administration, he has had the most stable approval ratings in the polls compared to the majority of his predecessors, stretching all the way back to the 80s with the Bush administration. So he's even beating people like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Meanwhile, Biden, 40 years he's been on Capitol Hill, and he's always conducted himself with aplomb. But his 40 minutes last night were the most rehearsed, laboured and tone-deaf of his career. Calling the president man? Seriously? Kennedy, hell, even Nixon would be rolling around in their graves at what these two displayed. While both were losers last night, the overwhelming commentary was that Trump was, yet again, unbecoming for a president. But again, it's the same criticism he copped 4 years ago. Since then, he's admitted to sexual harassment and even mocked American troops. And everyone knows you never go there with vets in the US. You think it's going to change? I'd love to hear what your thoughts are, because I highly doubt it. Drop me a line at thewestlive@wanews.com.au. Looking back, it sort of makes our leadership spills in Canberra seem like child's play. We'll chat more about that debate later in the show, but first, let's get into issues closer to home, specifically on board that Patricia Ohlendorf. We'll chat to the Health Minister in a moment.
The West Live.
The West Live
with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
Just when we thought WA had nailed its COVID response, along comes another bloody ship from overseas carrying infected crew members. It's opened a whole can of worms up in Port Hedland, where the Health Minister, Roger Cook, flew back from last night. Minister, thank you so much for your time this morning. You spoke with the locals at a community meeting yesterday. What were they telling you?
Yes, good morning, Jenna. And we had a great day yesterday speaking with staff, Waymat, port workers, but also with the community meeting last night. And obviously there's a level of anxiety in the community around the COVID-19 pandemic generally. That's now been certainly elevated as a result. Parked off the shores, 18 nautical miles off Port Hedland, and of course the unwell crew members that are in our hotel quarantine.
Yeah, of course.
But it was a really good meeting, Jenna. It was really constructive. I think everyone came away from it really appreciating the information that was provided, particularly by our medical experts on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to really just answer any questions or concerns that were raised.
Yeah, and I think it's also great, just to give you a bit of a tip, good on you for going up there in front of the community, as we've spoken to a number of stakeholders up there, basically calling for more information and a lot of transparency. So it was great that you sat down with them. I guess we saw images published online overnight about a woman, a potential health worker, that was spotted attending to crew members without any PPE. Is she now in quarantine?
Well, look, my understanding is she wasn't a healthcare worker, okay, but was certainly a member of the Department of Health, WA Country Health Service.
Right.
The information I have at the moment is that she did not come within proximate distance, certainly not 2 metres of the crew members, and was not considered a close or casual contact. I'll be speaking again with the department today just mm-hmm. to get reassurances about the way that we're managing her mm-hmm. And her situation. Look, there's 2 lessons coming out of this, though, Jenna. One, you can never be too careful with this disease.
Yeah.
Never be too careful. And this is a warning for everyone, not just healthcare workers, that we cannot take our safety for granted. And 2, it was a bad look for our health team. We have been saying to people all along, you know, you've got to do the right thing, protect yourself, protect mm-hmm. your family. So I was particularly disappointed to see her not wearing PPE in the frame. But I'm assured by the health team that she isn't a public health risk.
Right. In terms of where the crew members are isolating, they're at a hotel and there's a 2 metre radius around that. Some people were telling us that apparently the Port Hedland Detention Centre would be a more appropriate place. What do you say to that?
With the interagency support group that which is made up of organisations and agencies mm-hmm. right across the Pilbara who are coordinating our public health effort. They're doing a great job, so kudos to them. I raised this issue with them yesterday. They told me that centre is actually very run down
right.
and wouldn't be habitable. Mm. Certainly, however, the Commonwealth Government has made it very clear that they're not prepared to utilise any of their Commonwealth detention facilities mm-hmm. for that quarantining arrangement. Look, I went and had a look at the quarantining arrangements yesterday for myself.
Mm-hmm.
There is police, security and ADF personnel on board in addition to our on-site, in addition to our health and welfare teams. The way the hotel is actually configured is that this is a very separate wing of the hotel. So it's able to be completely fenced off as well. And so we've erected a large fence around the perimeter of the hotel section. So it's actually an ideal setup in terms of making sure these crew members don't present any sort of public health risk to the community.
That's great. I guess a lot of people would have watched the horrific scenes unfold out of Victoria, and when there was talk of sending private security guards up to attend to these people in isolation, there was a bit of concern amongst locals and medical professionals down here in Perth. What type of training have those people had to ensure that we don't see the same thing that happened in Victoria?
Yeah, so look, there's a world of difference between the arrangements they have in Victoria and those arrangements that we have in place mm-hmm. in Western Australia. So to our security personnel, they are actually a select group from a select group of companies.
Right.
Each of the security guards has to undertake infection control training
mm-hmm.
And from that perspective, they're not just your everyday security guards. These are people who have got as a result of the needs of these facilities. In addition to that, Jenna, we've got our health and welfare teams on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Every hotel has at least 3 doctors, 9 nurses, logistics people, coordinators, administrators, and they continue to watch the watches,
yeah.
if you want a better description. So we have direct oversight of the facilities, and certainly in terms of infection control, we drive a very tough show.
Yeah.
So in relation to the situation in Port Hedland, we actually flew 12 of the security personnel to the facility yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with a number of them yesterday, and they were very proud of their qualifications, their extra experience and training. And like the ADF and the police that are on guard, they're keeping that whole situation in tight lockdown.
That's great. We saw you yourself and the Premier front the media this week to talk about the softening of the hard border, and next week we'll see people coming in from other places around the country, and they won't have to isolate in a hotel. The new G2G app, where it'll kind of take away the onus of cops having to go around to people's houses to check on people. Are you comfortable with the technology, and will it work given the shortcomings of other apps we've seen during this crisis, such as, you know, the WhatsApp group and also the COVID Safe app?
Yeah, look, and we are. We have been developing this this software over a long period of time. It hasn't just popped up in the last week or so. We've been working on this one for a long time.
Yeah.
And so we are very confident of the technology. But what we're also confident of, this will free up police resources, but also just stop people having coppers roll up at their doorstep, which some people, you know, would prefer was not the case.
It's a bit confronting for some people.
Well, indeed. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people don't think it's the best look for their neighbours. But I'm comfortable with it, I must say. But look, we've noticed that there's been a significant number of people who have now downloaded the app. Already we're seeing hundreds of people pinged or check in remotely via the app. So just in the first 48 hours, we've seen a big uptake of that. So it's clearly a winner.
Yeah.
And I think this is a real key. This sort of innovation and digital technology will be a real key for just allowing us to have the same quality guards and precautions, but, you know, allowing us to open things up a lot more.
In terms of the tech, and I'm sorry if I don't know where it's all originated from, but was it, you know, locally produced, and would this be a potential thing that you're really keen to lean into into the future, that health and technology really coming together, especially if it's being developed out of WA?
Yeah, great question. And yes, well, I can confirm it's the same local company that helped us put the GTG app together. So this is world leading. We've already had some interest nationally about the app and how effective it is. And so we're very proud of that development. And look, the combination of good remote health utilizing digital technology is the way of the future, not only in terms of these sort of public health crises, but just in the way we deliver healthcare generally.
Yeah.
It's an outpatient appointment, an appointment with your local GP, particularly people living in isolated regions of Western Australia. You know, the future for healthcare is really a digital future, and it's great to see we've got local WA firms with the capability, the drive and the innovation to really develop these sort of great sort of applications.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Back to that bloody ship. How are you? I mean, how do we trust countries where ships are originating from? Because you've said before that you sort of feel a bit let down by the Philippines and their response to COVID. I guess moving forward, do you think that what we saw in Port Hedland, that will be your initial response should this happen again?
Look, The health system is like a shield for Western Australia. Our public health teams have done a great job developing Western Australia's shield to protect us from any viruses that are coming from overseas.
Mm.
But look, we want to stop the arrows and the spears coming at that shield in the first place.
Mm.
And you know, certainly the situation with this crew, my understanding is that they didn't have a consistent regime in relation to quarantining ahead of their departure from Manila.
Mm-hmm.
It really invites questions as to how robust those processes are. And one of the purposes of catching up with the Pilbara Port Authority yesterday was really to explore, okay, how can we ensure that crews have an opportunity to switch through through vessels in a much more efficient and disease-free way?
Yeah.
Clearly, dropping into Manila, picking up a fresh crew is not the solution.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that we've got robust processes right across the world. WA is an international trader, and Port Hedland is literally the engine room of our national economy.
Yeah.
So we need to get that stuff right.
Yeah.
Having said that, Jenna, one of the really interesting stats which was brought up to me yesterday is that since COVID-19 hit, we've had over 4,000 vessels go through the Pilbara Port.
Right.
In addition to that, that includes over 100,000 crew members that have come from all over the world and moving through that port. So the fact that we've only had this single outbreak, you know, the odd disease here and there, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, flu, some injuries, things like that, we can fix crews up.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we've had so many come through, literally 100,000, and only had this one particular outbreak, really is a sign that the systems are good, but we want them to be more robust.
Yeah, of course. In terms of the slings and arrows potentially coming from over east when things sort of relax a little bit next week, how are you feeling about it? Are you nervous for us here in WA?
No, look, we're very confident of our hotel arrangements now. We've had a number of months to hone them.
Mm-hmm.
All our active diseases are either in our hotel quarantining system. It is robust. It is tight as a drum. So when the numbers increase in the next over the next couple of weeks, we think we do have the capacity to manage those numbers, particularly now that we're allowing Victorians to quarantine at home. That's going to free up more capacity in our hotel system. And as I said, our hotels have kept us really safe to date. We're very confident of the processes and the procedures around. So we'll be able to welcome more Aussies back home, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The footy on Saturday night, it's an absolute sellout at Optus Stadium, so around 36,000 people will be heading down. What's your advice to punters that are heading along to watch the game for the Eagles?
Oh, look, cheer to your horse for the Eagles. is my number one advice. But my, the second advice is, look, the virus is still in our community. We cannot let our guard down. So even though you're going to the footy, and look, everyone, enjoy yourself and cheer for the Eagles.
Obviously.
But make sure that you can continue to try to look after your personal hygiene, your physical space, and your physical distance. Need to, as a community, continue to be vigilant. We want to continue to open up our economy. We want to make sure that families and communities can continue to socialise and be together. The way we can do that is by all taking personal responsibility to undertake those measures. And of course, Jenna, you know, the final point which has to be made is that if you are unwell in any way, stay away from the footy, stay away from work, stay away from school, even though it's school holidays, so you do that anyway. but above all, make sure you get yourself tested.
Yeah, absolutely. Health Minister, it is the budget will be handed down federally, and also Treasurer Ben White will hand down our local one next week. Health is a massive portfolio. What are you hoping to see come out of both?
Well, obviously, we need to continue to make sure that we can invest heavily in healthcare. I think COVID-19 has demonstrated to us just how important a strong public health system is, and the McGowan government will continue to invest strongly to make sure that we have a system which is world class. But there's no doubt about it, we're all going to be under pressure in relation to the budget. I expect to see a sea of red ink across the federal budget, and we need to continue to make sure we keep a lid on any growth in the health budget. That is, make sure that growth is only on the basis of efficient delivery of healthcare, but continuing to make sure that health is our number one priority.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess WA has handled COVID so well, but then we see some stories such as, you know, a lack of ambulances in Perth's northern suburbs and things like that. What would be your main priority to see in the budget next week, and your main priority moving forward as Health Minister once COVID sort of dissipates into the rearview mirror, fingers crossed?
Yeah, well, we're about to conclude a contract with the St John's Ambulance for another 2 years of their their service to the community. Mm-hmm. So we need to continue. And one of the important changes which we'll make is fund St John's Ambulance based upon their demand and their volume of work, rather than just a single number that we put up in each contract.
Yeah.
That will be a really important development, because it allows us to continue to grow the budget for St John's consistent with the demand patterns across the metro area, which will set us up better for the future. That's an important reform. In relation to health expenditure, obviously we need to make sure that our emergency departments remain number one and continue to be able to see patients, that we continue to drive down the elective surgery wait list, which banked up over the COVID-19 period, and we need to continue to see strong investment in our hospitals. But Jenna, one of my key focuses at the moment is to make sure that we get a good stream of funding around mental health services as well. Look, we've had a COVID-19 global pandemic. I think mental health is going to be the next global pandemic which impacts on Western Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you make of President Trump during the election debate yesterday? I know you're a busy man, so you probably didn't see it, but he said that a vaccine is very close, potentially a week away. What do you make of that?
Well, yeah, that's just rubbish. it's not just a week away. But what is exciting is to see the way we are continuing to treat the virus and advances in relation to that, and advances in relation to how we test for the virus, which will allow us to continue to manage the disease much better. There's a lot of work going on internationally around a vaccine. It certainly won't be here in a week. It certainly won't be here in a month.
Yeah.
But that work is ongoing. And maybe sometime in 2021, we might see some emerging in the marketplace. And of course, health has done a lot of work in the meantime to make sure when that does happen, we're in a position to roll any vaccine out across the state as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to chat to a politician who knows what he's doing. Health Minister Roger Cook, thank you so very much for your time. I'm sure you're super busy, so we'll let you get back to it. We'll chat to you again soon on the West Live.
Thanks, Jenna. All the very best.
Did you happen to watch that debate I was just speaking about with Minister Cook there last night, described by CNN, who is seen as one of the more mediocre of outlets, as a shit show? This is simply too bizarre to talk about, so I have some audio to play you. Here's another snippet.
A lot of people died, and a lot more are going to die unless he gets a lot smarter, a lot quicker.
So, Mr. President?
Did you use the word smart? So you said you went to Delaware State, but you forgot the name of your college. You didn't go to Delaware State. You graduated either the lowest or almost the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me. Don't ever use that word.
Oh, give me a break.
Because you know what? There's nothing smart about you, Joe.
Jeepers creepers. Joining me now from Monash University is U.S. political expert Meghna Srinivas. Meghna, what did you make of the debate?
The debate was chaotic at best. both candidates had expectations that they were meant to live up to.
Yeah.
Joe Biden was supposed to remain calm in the face of Trump's attacks.
Mm-hmm.
He was meant to stay on message, to stick to his points, but I think at times he fell into Trump's trap.
Yeah.
And Trump, on the other hand, while we expected a lot of that from him, the personal attacks, the aggressive nature, the combative presence that he had, I think even for him, he underperformed expectations.
Do you think that, I guess that word underperform, do you think a lot of people were quite surprised with just how lackluster the entire production was?
I think people expected that it being a presidential debate, it would have some level of formality or respect between the candidates, or at least respect for the moderator.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it descended into so much chaos between Trump and Biden, Trump and the moderator, the whole event just turned out to be chaotic.
Yeah. Look, the rest of the world, I think, is just sort of walking around going, what did we just see? You've probably been analysing all of the reaction since this aired over in the US a couple of hours ago. What do you think the rest of the world is thinking and feeling about America right now?
I think the rest of the world has come to expect this from Trump, but I think they expected Biden to offset Trump's aggressive, combative nature. They expected him to kind of stick to the points, to appeal to the voters, to bring a calm presence to the debate. But Trump taking over so much and just launching so many personal attacks on Joe Biden, which at times he wasn't able to react to. It just gave the feeling of just not a presidential event. It looked like more of a primary debate where the candidates are always at each other.
Yeah. With, the amount of, I mean, I know that the debate was being fact-checked and things like that, but why does America have such an issue with truth and these untruths that Trump just spurts out, and potentially Biden as well? Who calls it out?
It's been 4 years where truth has been such a disputed concept, and really it started with Trump in 2016. The word fake news has become such a big part of society now that even when he is telling the truth, even when anyone is telling the truth, just saying the word fake news, it can completely dilute the truth. So even though people spend so much time fact-checking claims, trying to fact-check Trump at every point, it doesn't matter, at least to his supporters. They think that he's right and the fake news media is the fake news media.
Yeah.
So for them, it just doesn't matter. For the rest of America, for the people who care about the truth, they are already anti-Trump. Or if they're independents, they tend to steer away from Trump after displays like this.
Yeah. Interestingly, so do you think that there's any point in having another debate?
It's always good to have debates. It's a democratic process. So for the candidates to face each other, it's always a good thing, technically. But in this election, people are already voting. They've been voting before this debate. They're voting now in mail-in ballots, in person. It's already happening. So how much effect it actually has on the election, we won't know till November. But having a debate is always a good thing.
Trump says he won because, of course, he did. Who do you think won last night's debate?
I don't think we can say either candidate won the debate. If winning means appealing to undecided voters, neither one did that. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden was so caught up in trying to respond to Trump that he lost his message at crucial points. And Trump alienated people who would have tried to vote for him by attacking Biden, attacking Biden's family, and refusing to accept the results of the election, making fun of COVID-19 through masks. Mm. So he alienated people who would have tried to vote for him. So if that's what we call winning, I don't think either candidate won. But I think the measurement is who lost the debate. Which that would be Trump. Because as much as we expect him to be that combative, that aggressive, I don't think anyone expected him to not have respect for the moderator as well or for the whole debate process.
Yeah. Interestingly, do you think that, and I've been speaking to a number of people in the US to talk about, I guess, what people think about what is presidential. Do you think that this debate and also Trump's 4 years in the White House could completely change what it means to be the US president moving forward? Or is this just a blip on the Republic's radar?
A lot of what counts as presidential is within the president, within the leader. So it's their personality. It's how they approach the presidency. So Trump didn't change his personality or his style after he won the election. He just took what he had in the campaign straight into his 4 years in office. He was hostile with people he already didn't like. He didn't have concern for the policy, for other political actors. So in that sense, being presidential is down to the president. Whether future candidates, future presidents have the same problem, they need to approach the word presidential through their personality. So if they already care about the presidential nature of American politics, then it will be good for them. Yeah. But if, like Trump, they don't care about processes, then the word presidential could mean nothing soon.
Wow, it's going to be really fascinating to watch come November. Monash University's US political expert and this year's United States Fellow for Young Australians, Meghna Srinivas. Thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, the last few days have been disastrous for the AFL with several high-profile players in a lot of strife. And we're just weeks out from finals in what's been the most extraordinary season in Aussie rules history. My good mate, Stuffin Quarters, will be in to give their expert analysis of what's ahead.
The West Live. Making news.
Almost Friday, El Giorgio from Sunrise. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. What is making news this morning?
I think the big one today is the $800 million jobs boost that BHP has announced.
Fascinating.
What a good thing to report on this morning, given that unemployment is at an all-time high in this state across the country, killing our economy, COVID has.
Indeed.
So this is good news. There's about 3,500 jobs on offer through this. Half of them are going to be for people right here in Perth.
So good.
And it's aimed at young people, so apprentices and trainees. So it's just a really good thing for people looking to get their foot into the door of the mining industry.
Indeed, of the big Australians. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And how's it been received, do you think?
Look, it's only just come out, but I'm sure it's going to be
El Giorgio is awful.
I haven't spoken to anyone yet, but I'm sure it's going to be positive. I mean, there's just nothing really bad to say about it, is it? And we receive half of the $800 million boost right here in our state. So
good to see.
Yeah, it's a great benefit for
us. Indeed. Now, we spoke yesterday about Harley Bennell. Mm. How is he doing this morning?
He's due to come out of hospital any minute. He should be getting on a flight that's arriving here early afternoon. He'll have to do that 14-day mandatory quarantine period that everyone has to do when they're coming back into WA at the moment. So he'll do that. And then the hope then is that he will go into rehab to hopefully get his life back on track and in order. You can't help but feel bad for this guy.
No,
yeah.
No,
so really, we wish him all the best.
Indeed. So he was granted an exemption, which is great. So he'll be coming home to rest and relax, which is a good thing.
Right here in Perth. And he's got his pregnant partner here too. Oh. So you can only think that being back in WA is a good thing for this guy.
Indeed. El Giorgio from Sunrise, we'll see you on air tomorrow, and then you join us in the West Live after that. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jenna.
Thanks, El. See you tomorrow. Coming up, the country town where you can't buy a bag of groceries after 3 p.m. in the afternoon on Sundays. But here's the rub. It's not the locals who are pissed about it. Nat Richards will reveal all in the Wild West shortly. But Neds have recently jumped on board as a proud sponsor of the West Live, and we're ready to take it to the Neds level this spring racing carnival season. And also, Hannon's Handicap is today, so remember that, people. If you don't know much about Neds, in a nutshell, it's where betting meets innovation and fun, which makes sense why they have just launched this great new product called Filterform to help you find your perfect match this spring, and it's available across all three racing codes, Thoroughbred, Harness, and the Doggies. You can select from your favourite jockey or trainer. You can even select an odds range. This is perfect for someone like me who wants to have a cheeky punt but has no idea how to study the form guide. Find your perfect match today and take it to the Neds level. Be sure to gamble responsibly, though. Call 1-800-858-858.
Duffin Quarters.
It's my favourite time of the week. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Jenna, I heard it this week. Very impressive.
You like the little intro?
Yes.
Duff, you missed it, mate.
Oh, sorry, I didn't have the intro. Do you like a cheeky punt, do you, Jenna?
I like a cheeky punt, but I also... But
you have
I
to
always
be very careful how you say that.
As a woman, I do. I tend to go on the colours of the silks.
You know what? That's as good a punt as any. My uneducated punting, largely uneducated punting, I tend to go to the racing experts. But, it's a bit of fun this time of year, though, when with all the Group 1s starting to happen and, you know, spring carnival, and it's a really good time of year.
Well, cows kicking up. The Hannon Handicap kicks off today. I'm surprised you two are even here. That's why I was alerted. I'm like, God, I better make sure that they come in. They may be up in Cal already.
There's no prizes for guessing where Steve Butler is.
Hello, Butts, if you're listening. Have one for me. I've never been and would love to. I've been to Cal, but I've never been to the racing round there, and it's one of the ambitions. I've got to do it.
Indeed, indeed. Now, massive week in footy, obviously. You had that interesting story last night about Nate, the kids from Western Bulldogs that can't
Aaron
get
Norton.
Home. Yeah.
Well, the G2G form. Look, it's not unusual. It's not isolated. A lot of people are in this boat. He just feels it because they've been tested a couple of times a week. He's been locked down most of the year. He feels it. He's done the yards, and that when their footy season ends, he wants to come home. He turns 20. He's only 20. So he turns 21 in November. His grandmother, who's very close to, is having her 80th birthday. So, look, the government, the police are saying there are no exceptions. Everyone's in the same boat. They're saying, well, we did the hard yards. We're entitled to. I think what we might find is you can reapply for these things.
Yeah.
His was rejected in 90 minutes.
Whoa.
So these things, you can reapply for them. And I think when things are relaxed a bit more next week, we might find that he has a bit more luck. Let's hope so.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Harley Bennell, what a story that's been this week, right?
Yeah, Harley. It's a concern now because I think the AFL Players Association is involved now, and their main concern is getting him back to Western Australia and getting him some help. But his football career at AFL level is definitely over. I'm not sure that he even has a future at Waffle level, because I'm not sure that anyone will want the disruption that Harley represents coming into their club. And the interesting thing about Harley is that he's actually popular amongst his teammates. Mm. You know, he's a well-liked person. He's good company, apparently, but he's one of those guys where, you know, as footballers will often use the colloquialism, one is too many and 55 is not enough when it comes to drinks. And and unfortunately, he's committed the COVID breach. That has led to Melbourne reassessing what was going to be a one-year contract. So he was about 24 hours away from getting a one-year contract extension. Committed the COVID breach. Melbourne reassessed. They thought, well, maybe he should retire. And then this has set another set of actions in motion. And what it underlines is you have to be so resilient to be an AFL player, and you have to always plot your next step very carefully, because if one mistake leads to two, leads to three, leads to four, then you end up in very dangerous territory very quickly.
Excellent point, Duff. The only thing I'd add is that for Harley, I think hopefully he can find something he's passionate about, whether that's footy at Waffle level or at a lower level than Waffle level. I don't think it matters if it's something nothing to do with football. As long as he finds something he's passionate about, gets himself looked after, That's the key for him going forward, and let's hope he gets there, because as Duff said, he's very popular. It just makes, you know, one too many turns good blokes into people who make very bad decisions, and he made too many of them.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing is that, like, there will be sympathy for Harley because he's a great talent. We all wanted him to see we all wanted to see him back out there playing the sort of football he was capable of playing. Mm. But 100 kids get their hearts broken at the AFL draft every year.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you have as many chances as Harley has had based on talent and you still haven't been able to make those chances count, then, you know, karma. It gets you.
Yeah.
The sample size was small but really, really spectacular, and that's what frustrated us, because all we, Duff and I have spoken about this ad nauseum on the podcast.
Yeah, indeed.
We just wanted to see him out there because he's one of those players who you just go the footy to watch.
He's just exquisite on the field. He that's is. The problem.
Yeah.
So, Jenna, just to put that in context, at 19, this is at 19, so this is like younger than Adam Chera and Andy Brayshaw are right now. Harley, 3 games in a row playing midfield and forward, kicked 3 goals and had over 20 possessions in a game.
God.
So that's 9 goals in 3 games plus the 20 possessions on top of that.
And backed it up later in the year, didn't he, Duff?
And then later in the year he had 38 and kicked 4 goals against Melbourne. And then the next year against Geelong he had 27 and kicked 6. Now we're talking Dustin Martin, Patrick Dangerfield numbers at 19.
Yeah.
So what he could have been is mind-boggling.
Is it a question, because then you also see the really tragic story around Elijah Taylor. Mm. Is there enough being done at even a grassroots level to look after these kids that may fall through the cracks?
Oh, this is a really good question, Jenna. There's plenty of programs in place, but there's always going to be kids falling through. There's there's never going to be enough.
Yeah.
That's the answer to that. There's never going to be enough. Therefore, there will always be kids falling through the cracks, unfortunately.
Mm.
Simple answer.
How do you think the AFL are going to handle, or the Swans are going to handle this Elijah Taylor stuff? It's a messy situation.
Well, I think the first thing, they'll wait and see how it plays out in court, but they can now get together. He's pleaded guilty. They can now get together and probably think about something going forward. I can't make that call. That's up to the club. Mm. Pretty strong culture at Sydney.
Yeah.
They would back themselves to get him right, that's for sure. If they were prepared to, I think Sydney, Geelong's another club with a great culture, like that can rehabilitate kids.
Yeah.
So they would back themselves, Duff. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. Look, footy clubs, one of the things they'll be concerned about is there being a very bad result if they just cut him loose. Mm. So they'll want to support him and they'll want to educate him and they'll want to rehabilitate him. He's very young. He had a very rough upbringing, and there was concern. So there were actually people among AFL recruiters who were contacting the WA Football Commission when Elijah was coming through the system, and there was Elijah and there was a couple of other young Indigenous kids who they were concerned about, and they asked them specifically about those kids to please put more welfare services around them.
Yeah.
And please work on your welfare services, because we think there are issues where you're not doing enough. So I tend to think they'll stand by him. But having said that, there are a lot of factors at play here. You know, the respect for women policy is very strong within the AFL. It's very strong for a reason. And I think there's a bit to play out here.
Yeah, but also there's this story. Hopefully there is a story of a positive outcome. There's a rehabilitation story here. He's so young. You have to take in the fact that this all happened in the full glare of the media. Young kid, young couple, very messy.
So many of these stories that obviously happen without the full glare of the media as well. This is a story that's way too common, unfortunately.
Indeed. On lighter notes, Saturday, what are we looking forward to at Optus Stadium?
Well, I think it's of all the – do you agree, Duff? I think of all the 4 games, for me I think this is the one with the most likely outcome. You could confidently predict West Coast to win.
Okay.
Not by any means over the line. They will make a few changes, but I don't think that matters so much in this season we're having. The players haven't been, some of them haven't been out very long anyway. So I don't mind the disruption in terms of, you know, 5 or 6 changes. But I think where they're at, where Collingwood's at, I think West Coast win this one pretty comfortably with a couple of big ins.
Yeah, I like West Coast in this game, but mainly because they can get scoreboard pressure on teams, and that's what they do better than most of the teams in the competition. When Collingwood beat them here last year, they had 3 goal kickers, and that's all they needed. They kicked 9 goals between them. I think Majacek kicked 4, I think Cox kicked 3, and Dugowie kicked 2. And then everyone else adds a couple in around that. If Collingwood kick 12 goals, they're in this game up to their eyeballs.
As long as they're Collingwood and not the Washington Generals.
Yeah.
Because when they got pantsed earlier in the year, I think it was Nathan Buckley who said it was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters against after quarter time. It was 12 goals to one after quarter
12
time.
12 goals to one. Say. West Coast, and Adam Simpson has said, we don't expect that to happen again. I think West Coast kicked 18-3. Like they were kicking them from, I think one guy kicked a goal from the river.
Not that far, actually.
Yeah, but
I
you
could
stand
probably
on
have
the...
a punt at
they
that.
They were kicking them from everywhere that day. It wasn't your typical day, and they got scoreboard pressure on them, and Collingwood folded up. Scott Pendlebury, who Quarters is writing a great piece on for this weekend, he didn't play that day. He's the key to their midfield. And Jordan DeGoey, who's the key to their forward line, didn't play. But that said, no one plays a ground better than West Coast plays Optus Stadium, so expect them to
win. Undefeated there this year too, you know. Scott Pendlebury, just go along to watch him if you can, because one of those players who just has time and space.
He does, doesn't he? Where's DeGoey? Is he back?
Yeah.
Ah.
He's back and important. Had a big first week back, and second week was a little quieter. But for me, I like their forward line. There's a lot of debate about whether Mason Cox should play in that forward. I love Collingwood with Mason Cox in that
forward.
Because he just squares them up. He's just that focal point, that target, and when the ball hits, all he has to do is bring the ball to the deck and then the rest can get at it. But DeGoey is the sort of player, and he's one of the ones who could, if Colin was going to win, he'll kick three.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Simple as that.
Yep, I agree.
Here's me saying true, like I know.
And there's three other games.
Talking about.
Do you want three quick tips for the other
yes,
games?
Yes, hit me, so we can have a
tonight,
punch.
Geelong v Port, Dove.
Port for me.
Minor
I'm going
premiers.
Geelong.
Really?
Yeah, touched them up last time they played them. It is at home at Adelaide, so it's a bit of caveat emptor, but I'm confident Geelong. I think Geelong, I think the winner of this game, you get the week's break, you go, and then you, so Adelaide could play Adelaide, Gabba.
Ooh.
If they win this, it's whoever wins this, I think, will probably play Richmond in the GF.
Ooh.
So that means you'll be tipping Richmond to beat Brisbane.
Correct.
I'm going to tip Brisbane.
Yeah.
Because I get a feeling that this is a big game for the Lions, and well, clearly it's a big game, it's a final, but I think it's like a watershed game.
Well, I haven't beaten them since 2009.
Mm. God, wasn't Michael Voss playing then?
No, he wasn't quite, but
his boots were still hanging in the locker.
Johnny Brown was.
Yeah, Jonathan Brown was. So, look, I'd love to see Brisbane win in my heart of hearts because I'd like to see them progress. Chris Fagan's done a great job, their coach. Richmond's got some big. Tom Lynch is a really big out, and Harris Andrews is a really big in, as is Jared Berry for Brisbane. That could swing it, but I just like the way Richmond, they just build when this time of year comes around.
And yeah.
Geez, they're going to be hard to beat. It'd
be nice to see the Lions win so they can probably get more than 2,000 people at the grand final in Queensland.
Yay. We'll both tip the Doggies to beat the Saints.
Yeah, we are. Mike Brady's going to be performing at the grand final on his own. That's going to be a bit weird for him. It's great. I love Mike Brady, but up there, Cazale, and he looks around and, yeah.
You know, I've got
they'll all be sitting down because they're bloody banana benders that don't
no,
get
but
it.
No, but he's the MCG. He'll be doing it solo at MCG and there'll be a live crowd.
I've got a message for Victoria there. Like, it's in Queensland. Let it go.
Yeah.
I think I'm
definitely with
you. But a grand final without up there because Ali Duff. And they should have Paul Kelly. Leaps and bounds should be played at every grand final, even though this year's not at the MCG.
Instead of high on the bridge, looking out on the hill
Gabba.
From the MCG.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You can say it's the Story Bridge, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It is a nice bridge. Too bad about the stadium, that's for sure.
That's right.
Gentlemen, thank you so much very much for joining me always. Sports editor of the Sunday Times, Glenn Quartermain, and senior AFL writer for the West Australian, Mark Duffield. We can download the latest episode of The Game, the AFL podcast with Duff and Quarters, today.
You can.
Excellent. Thanks, gents. We'll chat to you next week.
The Wild West.
My good mate, editor of Perth Now, Nat Richards. How are you doing this morning,
Hello,
Sunshine?
Hello, Jenna. Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. Now, let's go straight to Cal because there's so much happening up there with race round kicking off. But you've got some new news.
Oh, I'm loving this. I'm loving this whole debate. So, imagine, picture this, right? Kalgoorlie, the borders are closed. So, all we can do is travel within our own state.
Yes.
A lot of people travelling round up north, down south, and they're going to Kalgoorlie.
Indeed.
Now, you arrive there, maybe 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, You think, oh, I'll get settled, unpack my bags and everything. Right, comes to 3:30, you think, oh, I'll just get some shopping in so we're all set for tonight.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere open. Uh-huh. And that's the debate that's going on at the moment. Because in Kalgoorlie, they've got a problem where they shops close at 3 o'clock. And that's a problem, because to me it is a problem, right? I'm a tourist. I want to spend my money in places right now. I love to travel.
Yeah.
And I can't go anywhere except within WA. So I'm going to go places like Kalgoorlie.
Indeed.
And over there, the council have been having a real hoo-ha over changing their shopping hours from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. to 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., which they have. Now, one of the businesses who live on that strip, mm-hmm. out on Hannon Street there, mm-hmm. if you've ever been, it's the main strip in mm-hmm. Kalgoorlie.
Yeah.
And they're trying to increase the shopping hours to 6 o'clock at night, which to me doesn't seem unreasonable on a Sunday, right?
No.
Do you know? We're in 2020. Well, this is what gets me now. So a lot of the businesses have said, yes, we want to open, but the council said, nah, we're not letting it happen. Oh. And it's because they're saying people deserve a lifestyle choice. We don't think people actually take up the opportunity. But the big problem is not being able to get your groceries past 3 o'clock. That to me seems crazy.
I just want, if I get to Kalgoorlie after an 8-hour trip, I just want to get a bag of Red Rock Deli chips and sit in my hotel room. Is that too much to ask?
Exactly what you said. And I love this line, which is from a particular councillor, Nadia Turner. We have increasing tourism opportunities at the moment. Let's be open when they get here. 100% right there. That's what's driving me crazy. You're not being able to go out and buy, like you say, buy a bag of chips or anything like that, or crisps as we call them. Mm. And this is a debate that's going on in Kalgoorlie at the moment. And I cannot believe it. It's 2020 and we're not looking at opening our shops past 3 o'clock on a Sunday.
You know what?
Come on, get out of the 50s, Kalgoorlie. Come and join us.
Look, I think that next thing, if you bring up daylight savings tomorrow, the show will probably be cancelled by Monday. So rage on, my friend. I enjoy it. Wake up, Kalgoorlie, and wake up all of WA. Just extend those trading hours. Now, scarily, it is the magpie swooping season, and those birds terrify me. But a Perth mum has issued a bit of a warning.
This is one for me, me over here, Jenna. Well, I've come from England, as you know. Pick up the accent, as you will.
Yes.
Over in England, we have these massive seagulls. So over here, your seagulls, they're tiny. Over in England, they're dinosaurs. Come over here and the magpies are just the same. It's the opposite, but with magpies.
Yeah.
And they swoop you and they take out eyeballs and they're horrible. They're horrible. I can't get over this, right?
Have you been swooped?
Magpies. And this woman who lives in Mandurah, now she was unpacking her car and sorting out her newborn baby, putting her in the pram. Her other two kids are standing on the grass.
Oh, no.
Presumably out of harm's way. Oh, no. A territorial magpie has come down and swooped this little four-year-old girl, and you can see the injuries to her face on perthnow.com.au. This poor girl, it missed her eye by, I must say, a couple of centimetres, and there's two decent-sized wounds on her head from this magpie that's just come and absolutely attacked her face. And she's put out a warning to other parents, say, look out, guys. It seems to be a bit of a hot spot for it, right? And she said here to us, she was very lucky at Mr. I. I can't imagine what would have happened. We looked around, there's trees that overhang the car park and they're swooping in all directions. It was just crazy. I've never seen a magpie go at it like that. It just kept going. And yes, they do, because they're protecting their young, just like you're trying to protect your young.
Yeah.
And these magpies, they're everywhere. So be careful, guys. But if you're out there, out in your park, look out, the magpies are out and they are dinosaurs over here. They take out eyeballs.
Indeed, I have been swooped a number of times and I've noticed and I've been told that apparently they, you know those new, the AirPods, the earphones?
Yes.
They are very much attracted to them, and I remember when they would always swoop me, they'd try and knock them out of my ears. So maybe
you know what? You won't be able to hear them coming either.
No.
Because they make me like big squat before they swoop. Oh, I know, because I ride my bike to work, Jenna, and they attack me. Oh, they're horrible.
Do you have the cables in your helmet, Nat?
I don't, because I don't want to look like an idiot.
Mate, well, do you want an eyeball or do you not want to not look like an idiot for 40 minutes? You weigh that up.
You do see them. You see them and they're kitted out. You know, all the gear, no idea people that you see on the bikes on the way to work.
Oh,
and
terrifying.
They've got everything on, the full skins and everything. And then they've got these helmets with a bloody cable tie sticking up. Oh, and they do look daft. I'm not going to those levels. I'm sorry. I'll lose my eyeballs, albeit. But
you are braver.
Horrible.
You are braver than I. Nat Richards, editor of Perth Now. We'll see all of that and more online today. Thank you so very much for joining us. We'll chat to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jenna. Ta-ra.
That's it from me. Tune in at 8:45 tomorrow over on thewest.com.au/live and also on Perth Now. Or a replay of today's episode will stream from 12:30 over on both websites, or just download the podcast whenever you get a chance. Have a lovely Thursday. Chat to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.